This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Don Bruns. He's a managing director at a company called Navigation Arts. Good morning, Don. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Navigation Arts, no, it's not a sailing company. No, it's not a travel agency. It's got nothing to do with that. Navigation Arts is one of the leading companies in town here that works with agencies to help them design websites, design apps, design mobile applications, and helps in a wide variety of topics that are very, very popular. And I wanted to drag Don in here and ask about native mobile apps, HTML5, mHealth, mGovernment, responsive design, all these terms that you read in government computer news and maybe you hear on Federal News Radio. And you go, no, I want to talk to someone who's smart, who knows this stuff, who can define it. And that's what we're going to do here, Don. But before we begin, perhaps you can open up and give us a little bit about your background, please.
Sure. So I work at Navigation Arts as an information architect and as managing director. So as a managing director, I manage our federal practice, and the federal practice comprises about 25% of our business. The rest of it is the other 75% is for-profit organizations, nonprofit organizations, and associations. So we really represent a very broad variety of clients. So we primarily work as a user experience consultancy. We're a digital consultancy that focuses on the user experience. And as part of that, we bring design, information architecture, usability, but also on the back end, we handle technology, content management systems, portal systems, back-end integration, and application development.
And if you're listening to this and it's 90 degrees outside 6 months from now, you can go to navigationarts.com and see a very, very well-designed website. It looks good. It's got, I don't know about colors, but I know it's got good colors, and it looks very attractive, and looks good on my smartphone, too. So it's, you accomplish both of those. It's kind of hard to pull that off.
Thank you very much. Well, there is a certain discipline and a certain process that goes into web design and development.
It's not accidental?
It's not accidental,
no. Oh, I thought it was.
No, it's so we follow a user-centered design process for both desktop websites, applications, and mobile experiences. And user-centered design is basically just a fancy term. It's an approach to the software development lifecycle that puts user satisfaction at the core of all design activities and development activities.
If we were to go down to the White House and meet some of the folks I know down there, they'd sure say, we don't care about users, we care about citizens. citizens. And so what they've done is they've come up with an initiative called the White House Digital Government Strategy that requires each federal agency to make two citizen-facing functions available as mobile apps by May of 2003. And that is what's going to precipitate this conversation is. Okay, the White House is twisting your arm. What are you going to do? Let's listen to the interview and find out the options that you have.
That's right. And so that Digital Government Initiative report is really a tremendous read. It's very visionary. It's great at outlining, what are the 12 steps to really doing a better job of serving the public, serving the taxpayers and citizens through the digital channel. What it's not so great at is saying how you go about doing that. It's very good at saying what thou shalt do and when thou shalt do it. So one of those 12 points is, like you said, to identify two citizen or public-facing services and make those available and optimized for the digital channel via a mobile platform.
It's like, bring me a good lunch. Well, what do you want? Well, just bring me something good.
Well,
bring me, it's
exactly
fuzzy, isn't it?
It is kind of. And a lot of federal IT professionals and federal web managers, don't know where to start. And that's a fair thing. This is something that you don't want to try at home for the first time. It's not something you want to do on live radio for the very first time. When you go through these kinds of processes, it's good to know. It's good to have a guide who's seen the movie before, who knows what's behind every door, and has the battle scars so that you don't have to inflict them upon yourself.
Now, the subtitle of this report is Building a 21st Century Platform. Well, I don't think the federal government's got any choice. You know, we had the folks from vaccines.org on, right, or vaccines.gov, and they surveyed their audience, and their audience wanted the information on a handheld device.
Right.
These are homeless people,
right,
that wanted information on a handheld device. And so the federal government, in order to be responsive, and I think that's why the folks at the White House are going, well, you know, the people are paying the taxes, want services from the government or information, and
right,
we have to present it in a way that's palatable for them.
Well, and that's, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because the Pew Internet and American Life Project recently released a report saying that 25% of all Americans now use a smartphone as their primary gateway and sometimes their only gateway to the internet. And for Americans making less than $30,000 a year, that number is 40%. And in a lot of cases, this isn't people who are going from their desktop computer to a smartphone. In a lot of cases, the smartphone or the tablet is really their first and only means to access the internet. And, you know, someone who makes less money or has less access to technology may not be able to afford a nice $3,000, you know, laptop or desktop, but a $300 or $400 smartphone, that's something that's within their reach. You know, I was speaking to someone yesterday who worked at the Department of Labor who said that, you know, during Hurricane Sandy, federal applications for aid relief, the bulk of them came in through tablets, and mostly because your desktop computer, your laptop computer was 10 feet underwater.
Right.
You know, the smartphone or the tablet you could take with you. And so that just seems to be, you know, the irresistible force that everything seems to be moving toward these days. And we are very much at the forefront of enabling that and making that a reality for the federal government and for our commercial clients.
All you have to do is walk around a typical agency. What you find is that the proliferation of smart devices,
yeah,
tablets. By 2015, more Americans will have mobile devices and PCs. So we've got
right
to do it.
Right.
So let's talk about some of the big, huge, big topics here that
sure
my listeners are scratching their head going, well, geez, I don't know. It says that we have to have mobile apps, but I always heard that HTML5 is better. It's more secure. What are the positives and negatives of both of these? This is going to be like a debate here. Apple versus
sure
Microsoft from years gone by.
Right, right.
Tastes great, less filling from 40 years ago. But today is, well, should you invest in a mobile app or should you invest in HTML5? Let's define both these terms for our listeners.
Sure. So, well, it's interesting. I mean, mobile app and HTML5 are sort of, you know, apple and orange. There are a lot of, you know, So the big debate is between generally HTML5 and Flash, and these are frameworks with which you could use to make a very immersive, interactive, animated, sound-enabled web experience. Typically, Flash does not work on the iPhone and some other mobile platforms. HTML5 really has established sort of a beachhead there. And personally, I'm more of an HTML5 person. I'm much more in favor of open standards rather than proprietary technologies. So I think ultimately, if there is a winner, I think HTML5 is going to be it.
In that category versus Flash.
Versus Flash. That being said, I have heard lots of complaints about performance issues with HTML5. And, you know, frankly, it's just not something that is largely adopted by the community, largely because there are only a certain set of browsers, the most recent browsers, that support it. And as people eventually upgrade their browsers to things that will support HTML5 and CSS3, then we'll start to see a greater proliferation of HTML5. But as long as people are still using Internet Explorer 7, it's going to be a harder thing for not only for developers, but also for sponsors of these applications to kind of push that technology.
A new browser coming out of China. You've heard about that, too.
It's just, that's right.
The proliferation of browsers here, it's got people going crazy. But I think when most people read the White House report, they think about mobile apps,
yeah,
and they don't compare it with Flash. They compare it with doing it as a separate application program on my device or as
right
part of the website. And they go back and forth on this. There's got to be strengths and weaknesses to both of them.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all application or situation. And I don't think it's ever going to be, you know, mobile apps win out over mobile-enabled websites or responsive design wins out over native apps or hybrid apps. And I'll explain what all those terms mean. But I think it's really a sort of, there are a lot of different ways to skin the cat. It's not a one-size-fits-all situation. And there's never going to be a clear winner. I think the decision to go with one approach versus another is largely going to depend on what the needs of your users are and what the needs of your business are or your agency.
You know, we just bought a car and we got a small car that got great mileage.
Yep.
But guess what? I can't haul anything in it. So I'm going to have to buy an SUV that can haul stuff but gets bad mileage.
Right.
So, but I need both.
Right.
And I think you have to figure out, well, you know, I'm not going to drive to New York in the SUV. I'm going to use the more gas efficient car.
Sure.
And I think listeners have to apply that logic that they know intuitively to this decision.
And it's something, and in a lot of cases, it's something that you can only really completely understand by reaching out to your users. I very often will speak to new clients, and one of the first questions that I'll ask them is, have you done user research? And invariably, they will say yes. And then the next question I will ask is, well, can you tell me about the user research that you've done? And then they start to hem and haw and, well, you know.
Well, not really.
Well, you know, I've shown it to my kids and I've shown it to my mom and
neighbor.
And we had a script that, you know, okay, first click this, then click that, then click that, and everything worked. So it's a perfectly usable website. And that's not quite as rigorous a process of user testing that we would, or user research that we would recommend.
We're going to have to take a break, let our users who are listening listen to some ads. When we come back, we'll talk about some best practices for designing a great mobile app. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Don Bruns, Managing Director at Navigation Arts. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Don Bruns, Managing Director at Navigation Arts. We're talking about mobile applications, HTML5. We're going to use all kinds of fancy words like responsive design and liquid design. You know, I teach a little class, and what I teach my students, and they hate me for saying this, I tell them, you know, in order to be terrific, you got to be specific. And I want to get a little specific here. Let's for our audience, let's come up with five or six, maybe half a dozen specific things that they can do to design a good mobile app. What would you, how, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, bang.
Sure. So I think, first of all, and there are, the first two things are really about 90% of what you would, of getting there, of getting toward a killer mobile app. First, it needs to address the needs of mobile users. And second, it needs to support your agency mission. That right there is really crucial. And when I say address the needs of mobile users, the temptation in a lot of cases is to take your desktop website and port it literally over to a mobile framework, a mobile layout. And that's a good thing to do, but that's not really going to meet necessarily the needs of your mobile users. For example, I wouldn't recommend that IRS take, you know, irs.gov and literally port every bit of it to the mobile device. I'll never file my taxes online through an iPhone. I will never do that.
Start with the user.
Exactly. So think about what the end needs of the end user are. So to use a commercial example, we work very closely with the Marriott Corporation, and we've helped them, not with Marriott.com, not the homepage, but we've done all of their hotel websites for all 17 brands, all 3,400 properties, the reservation path, and we've helped design their iPhone application. And rather than replicate the entire Marriott.com website on the iPhone application, where you can look for a job, plan your wedding, look at opening your own Marriott franchise, we focused on what the needs of the mobile user are. What would a mobile user need from a Marriott application? So it's 3 a.m. I just landed in Berlin. I've got no place to sleep. And the German police are not going to like me sleeping on a park bench. So please help me find a hotel room and let me book it online, pay for it online with my reward points, and give me directions to find it. Boom. That's all that application does. And it focuses on the needs of the mobile user, addresses that core functionality, and tosses all the rest aside. Similarly, with a federal example, we recently released a new website, or we designed and built a new website for the U.S. House of Representatives. The desktop site is very much geared toward sharing the experience of being at the House, explaining the history of the House of Representatives and what its mission in the role of government is. The mobile application, however, is geared toward the needs of those who, it does all those things, but it really focuses on the needs of the mobile users, people who are visiting the House of Representatives. Where do I find parking? Is the House in session right now? Can I observe a session in progress? You know, how do I get there, you know, via metro? Where can I go to eat? So addressing the needs of the mobile user is really key to creating a successful web application, and that comes from user research.
And each agency's got to be different. I mean, if you take a look at the House of Representatives, they have people coming to them. If you look at ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, they go out.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, well, each agency is a completely different world. Well, no, at the ATF, we have to worry about apps that maybe our agents can use and come
right.
back in.
Exactly.
House of Representatives, they have people come in. So it's almost like the commercial world where each agency's got completely different requirements. They got to step back and say, okay, here's the positives and negatives of a mobile experience. Here's the positives and negatives of desktop. And what do we use when?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. One of my favorite mobile applications in the federal space is actually AskKaren.gov. And this kind of really speaks to one of the third best practice of mobile application design and development, and that would be manage expectations and be sort of transparent, be self-evident.
Is that one of the sites where my turkey is green, should I eat it? Is
exactly.
that what it is?
That's a really good guess. You know, the funny thing is when I ask people most of the time, what is AskKaren.gov? You know, I'll show them a picture of the app and it's got a, you know, a nice green background and it's got a very, you know, smiling person, presumably
yeah.
that's Karen and a USDA logo. And I ask them, what do you think this application does? And nobody can guess what it does.
They should have maybe a picture of something, because that's what I think is a single guy's got a piece of turkey in the refrigerator that's 6 months old and wants to know if he should eat it or not. That's
right.
I guess that's the application for that.
Exactly. And this is something it's an application that could be very useful to users. It's something that definitely supports the agency mission of promoting food safety. It certainly would help deflect call center volume if I want to know how safe it is to cook or what the safe temperature for cooking a turkey or should my banana have spots on it or should my meat be turning blue. This is something that A, will keep people out of hospitals and B, keep them out of the call center because they can self-serve. They can get these answers online while you're cooking your turkey. You don't have to go to your desktop computer. You can just have your iPhone right there.
And I think you just hit the magic phrase is that each person listening to this has got a budget that's going to be reduced this year. We
sure.
all know that.
Right.
So how can they do? Well, one way is that to reduce the number of calls that come into a call center. Many
sure.
agencies have specific call centers. Groups within agencies have call centers. In order to reduce that, you can reduce that with a mobile app. So you can go up to your CIO and go, look, Buster, if we have this mobile app, this will reduce the pressure on the call center and reduce costs for our agency.
Right. But the trick is, and this is one of the last best practices that I will talk about, is that it's in order to be successful at that, you've got to align what's on your mobile app with the rest of your content governance strategy across your entire enterprise. So that if I go to the mobile app, I'm going to see the same content that's available on your website. I'm going to get the same answer that I would get from your call center or from one of your print publications or from walking into a VA medical center. I need to have a consistent message and a consistent delivery of that message across all of those channels. And that also takes a lot of work. And that's something where, you know, it's really going deeper than the mobile device at this point. Now you're getting under the covers. Now you're getting beyond the device. You're talking about integrating your content management system, integrating the delivery channels of all of your content, and making sure that there is that your mobile strategy is aligned to your organizational governance strategy.
I know a company in town here where their chief technology officer has a background, a bachelor's degree in environmental science.
Interesting.
And you think, this doesn't make no. What is this? This is an environment that the mobile app has to live in.
Right.
And someone with that training is going to go, well, of course, you know, if you move this to there, it's going to impact something else.
Sure.
So it's an environment, only in our world we call it enterprise architecture. But
right.
it's an environment that the mobile world has to live in.
And as organizations become more and more, as government agencies become more and more mature in the way that they approach mobile, the big mantra right now is mobile first. And I think that's not just an application strategy, but it's an enterprise strategy. It needs to be something that is part of your technology portfolio, and your governance processes need to address that.
I think Steve came up with shared first, mobile first, there's all kinds of firsts. I think everyone listening is worried about mobile devices. They call it BYOD
right.
and bring your own device, and the security people say bring your own disaster. I think from a perspective of designing a system, we have to take a look at what our customers are having and what about the people who are working for the agencies. And I want to talk about my best friends at BlackBerry. So what do you think is going to happen? Is BlackBerry going to just disappear? You think they're going to be in the game here in 6 or 8 months? I thought about them when I thought about agency challenges, because many mm-hmm. agencies had invested a lot of money in their BlackBerry system
right.
and are moving away.
Right. Yeah, I think this is a case where the user experience is finally really winning out. I think people will work with what's comfortable for them. I think, I think what you're seeing is sort of a pushback against, there's a push toward adopting things that have a better user experience. And that's one of the things that we repeat to ourselves at Navigation Arts as a mantra, that user experience really is the only sustainable competitive advantage in the digital space. And the user experience is a make or break kind of thing. You can't force people to use an experience that is bad for them. You know, anecdotally, we know that somewhere around 75 to 80% of all IT efforts fail. And that's not usually because of a failure of the technology. It's a failure of adoption.
Maybe it's a failure of not going to start with the users.
Well, exactly. And user experience and user-centered design is the best way of guaranteeing, not guaranteeing, but the best way of helping to ensure that users will adopt your solution. And so BlackBerry will either improve its user experience and get on board with the way that the industry is moving, or it will fall by the wayside. Apple was late to the phone business. Google was late to search. Facebook was late to social. But by mastering the user experience, these companies have really taken over their respective spaces. Nobody uses MySpace anymore. It's not that it's the technology is bad. It's not that you can't do all the things that you would want to do with it. But the experience of Facebook is just so much better. It's not perfect, but it's better.
Last month, I was at a conference in Maryland. It was for mobile health, and it's called mHealth, and the portmanteau, that's what it is, so mm-hmm. mHealth. And I see more and more people talking about mGovernment, mobile mm-hmm. government, and that's what we're talking about today, talking about mobile government and making this transition to mobile first and trying to figure out what kind of apps to use, what security implications are there with apps, what about the different types of stores that are out there. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we're talking about a big fancy phrase called responsive design and talk about how listeners can use responsive design to maybe make their sites more efficient and help reduce costs for their agencies. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Don Bruns, Managing Director at Navigation Arts. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Don Bruns, Managing Director at Navigation Arts. For more information, you can go to navigationarts.com, and they have blogs and white papers and videos and all kinds of stuff. In the break, we're talking about mobile app design. And what I turned to Don, I said, well, Don, there's a fellow that I know lives about 2 miles from me named Wayne Rash. He's a writer for eWeek, and he reviews mobile devices. And he gave a review last month, and he said, well, this is fine, but my fat fingers didn't allow me to type anything on it. Mm-hmm. And he included that in his review. And I think that may be part of what Navigation Arts does in finding out what users want for these mobile. I mean, it's practical, but it's really what people have to know, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's one of the things when you're designing for touch interfaces and touch interactions, you really have to test what you're building and not assume that everyone is going to have the exact finger dexterity that you will. The keyboards on the iPhone, even though they're about as good as it gets, are still very difficult to work with. And so there are things like haptic technology, which kind of give you a physical sensation when you touch the keyboard. And there are debates as to whether or not that's a solution in search of a problem. But I really do think that anything that you can do to accommodate people's fat fingers is going to help. And sometimes you won't even know that it's a problem unless you do the usability testing, and you have to do it on the device and in the context that it's being used, because that often matters as well.
And you assume certain things that are not necessarily fair to assume. Well, you used a fancy phrase, haptic technology, so you get 2 points for that.
Thank you.
There's another fancy phrase that maybe my listeners have heard and scratch their head, and they go, well, I've heard this thing called responsive design, and how really does it apply to mobile apps? Could you maybe give us a framework for this, for understanding
sure.
it?
Sure, that's a great question. So responsive design is something that's used very promiscuously. It actually refers to a very specific set of technologies that allows designers and developers to create a responsive layout so that you can have a website, a desktop web experience that will resize itself and rearrange itself at different sizes of browser display. So, and this is something that happens without a reload. It's basically a combination of JavaScript and CSS and other technologies, cascading style sheets and other technologies, that will take your desktop website, display it in one way on a desktop, and if you minimize your browser to, say, 600 pixels width, it may give you a slightly different look and feel to accommodate a smart tablet or something like that. And if you shrink it down even more, it will take on the form of an iPhone application or an iPhone or a smartphone experience. And this is something that, if it's done correctly, you'll never really know that you're actually using a responsive website. You'll go to your iPhone or you'll go to your Android or whatever device you're using, and you'll pull up drexel.edu and you'll see one experience. If you go to your laptop computer or your tablet, you'll pull up drexel.edu and you'll see a different experience slightly different, but optimized for the appropriate platform. And it's the key is that it's all managed out of one code base.
I went downstairs this morning in my kitchen, and my wife had her Retina iPad right there next to her smartphone, and we had two notebook computers. Well, guess what? If we look something up on a bet, let's say, we've never done that before, if you look something up, we want to have similar type experiences, and what exactly does this word mean? Or, oh, no, that was Louis XVI. No, it was Louis XIV. We go back and forth on something like that. And
right.
I understand why someone would want that now. It's kind of interesting. So progressive, is that usually contrasted with liquid design, or is that a different concept?
Sure. No, liquid is part of the responsive design framework. It's very analogous to it. And basically, the idea is that you want your design to work on all platforms, on all dimensions. And so liquid design is a tactic that you can use as part of responsive design, not necessarily, but essentially, that's the main thrust is to make something work on all platforms, and it doesn't necessarily even have to be the exact same website that's shown. You don't have to provide the exactly identical experience on an iPhone that you would get on the desktop. In fact, you really can't. You may choose to show certain kinds of content and not others. You may choose to show certain kinds of carousels or widgets versus others, and you may need to show even different navigation or content than others.
I was reading a couple articles this morning preparing for this interview, and there was a subheading on one of these articles, and the subheading was, Moses was right. We must respect tablets and iPads and Galaxies, all kinds of different tablets out there. Same rules apply, different for tablets. What about all these concepts as far as apps go and everything else? Completely different for a tablet device and for a phone, or
well,
similar?
We've taken a tablet-first approach to our mobile strategy. Everything that we do, every website that we design is minimally going to degrade gracefully to a tablet. Not degrade, but transfer gracefully to a tablet. And as part of that, we make certain kinds of design decisions and technology decisions. So when we program a site, or when we develop or design a site, again, say drexel.edu, we anticipate that when someone views this using our responsive framework, if someone views this site on a tablet, we've anticipated and provided for the kinds of touch interfaces that a user, or touch interactions that a user will expect to be able to use. They'll swipe, they'll tap. You won't have things like double click necessarily. And also, it will help influence our technology choices. So we will gravitate toward HTML5 rather than Flash, because Flash would not work on a tablet.
I'll be blogging about this interview. You can go to Google and type in John Gilroy blog, and my blog pops up. And is there a blog that you write, or can you recommend? I think Navigation Arts has some blogs. It's called the Innovation Blog. Is that right?
That's right. NavigationArts.com actually has a collection of blog entries and webinars and other kinds of white papers and insights that we maintain on our website. It's a really great read, and we cover topics that include mobile technology as well as content management, enterprise applications, the full gamut of digital solutions. So there's some really good stuff there.
And if you're a federal listener and you're about to make a decision about an app, it's always good to go out and see what's done in the commercial world, what's in other places. And you can go to navigationarts.com, and there's a fellow there by name Doug Brashear. And you can just read his blog maybe once a month and say, oh, well, this is kind of interesting, fascinating, because Doug has got, you know, boots on the ground. He's fighting this fight every day, and he has very good insights on things like haptic technology.
That's right.
He has insights on 6 best practices for designing web apps. So I think it's a real good source of information, whether or not you use Navigation Arts down the road, but you should use Navigation Arts as a source of information on, geez, how do you make this? What about BlackBerry? Should I consider BlackBerry or not BlackBerry? I mean, it's a real good, a source of information for me, at least.
Right. And there's always the sense that the federal government is trying to catch up, or even at this point trying to leapfrog what is going on in the commercial sector. You know, that is one thing that's really part of our DNA, is that we bring proven best practices of the commercial world to the federal space, and that applies to things like content management systems and mobile technologies and web design and responsive design.
In the commercial world, it's all about the money. In the federal world, they have a lot more restrictions and you know, the intentional design issues they have to confront. For example, Section 5 white requirements.
Sure.
And I was listening to the radio 2 days ago. A woman called in. She said, I am blind. Mm-hmm. What kind of mobile devices out there are the best ones for my particular situation? Or hearing impaired. I mean, especially a blind. And federal government, if the website has to be 5 white compliant, I'm sure that the apps have to be as well.
Yeah, and that's a really good question. And that's something that a lot of organizations struggle with. There are things that you can do. And it's not just blind people. I mean, you have to also consider that there are people with hearing impairments that may not be able to hear the text of that they may not be able to hear a speech. So you need to provide closed captioning that is in sync with what's actually being said. There are people with motor disabilities, so you can't assume.
And it could be you and me tomorrow. I mean, I get a car accident tomorrow. Sure. It could be me.
So 508 is really it's visual impairment is one thing that you definitely have to take into consideration, but there's all kinds of impairments that you also need to accommodate for. There are people who have cognitive impairments, so there may be times when you need to provide a really clear sense of where you are in the website because someone may not be able to gather to keep straight everything that's going on and where they got how they got here from A to Z. So it is something that continues to be an issue, and it's something that we provide for all of our clients, not just federal clients, but it's something that the accessibility aspect is something that is really crucial to everyone.
I'm going to come up with an analogy here. You tell me if it's ridiculous or
sure.
not. Next door neighbor got a dog. They had four kids, just had to get a dog. And after about 6 months, they realized that they had to take the dog for a walk regularly, and they had to schedule a vacation around the dog.
Right.
And they liked having that, but they didn't realize all this kind of baggage came with a dog.
Sure.
The same thing is with an app. You can go to your users, go to your citizens, design an app, make sure it's integrated in your enterprise.
Right.
It has a good user interface. But guess what? You know, there's maintenance issues. And
sure.
And by the way, operating systems change, don't they? I mean, this is a part of the puzzle that I think most people don't think about.
Right. And that's one of the things that can come into play when you're having the debate of whether or not we have a mobile app or a mobile-enabled website. If you have an app, then yes, you definitely need to provide updates. You need to make sure that it's part of your governance strategy to maintain this application so that you know you don't have people working on the 1.0 version that has bugs and eventually is no longer supported by the platform technologies. With a mobile website, you've got that located in a central place that facilitates or ameliorates the need to maintain upgrades.
Yeah, maintaining it's like getting a puppy. It's, oh, by the way, it has to be maintained. Same thing with
right.
apps, and it's just a different way. I think when you're considering mobile apps versus HTML, you have to put that as part of the equation. Got to take a quick break. When we come back, talk more about mobile apps and maybe about the dog next door. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's guest is Don Bruns, Managing Director at Navigation Arts. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's guest is Don Bruns, Managing Director at Navigation Arts. The focus of this interview so far has been mobile applications, but that has not prevented us from talking about fat fingers and dogs.
That's right.
Now we're going to move right on in a logical process. We're going to talk about Twitter. My Twitter handle is @RayGilray. You can follow me there. I follow a lot of people who, in fact, I follow one of the fellows at your company named Doug Brashear, and he is @DieselDoug. And is there a Twitter handle for your company you might want to tell our listeners?
Absolutely. We tweet under the handle of @NavigationArts.
@NavigationArts.
And these days, you know, my internet activity, I was a very early adopter blogger back in 1998. In fact, back when maybe 20 people in the world had blogs, I was one of them. And that's how I met my wife. She had a blog and I had a blog. And, you know, back then, people who had blogs would get together and talk about their blogs. It's like, you know, if you're in the 1950s and you're the first 10 people in your town to have a television,
right.
You'll get together and, you know, you may not have anything else in common.
Back when it was called a weblog.
Exactly. Actually, back then, we called them diaries or journals. This was even predating the term blog or weblog. So nowadays, the only tweeting or blogging that I do is for NavigationArts.com. And so I have a lot of different, we have a lot of different blog posts and webinars and white papers.
Now, if you're listening to this interview and it's 6 months from now, it's 90 degrees outside or something, and you want to see like a webinar from Navigation Arts, you have one that people can best practice for federal mobile. Is that right?
Exactly right. Yeah, this is a presentation that I've given several times in public and finally put it down as a webinar. And so you can access the webinar on the 6 best practices for mobile for creating killer mobile applications for the federal government. And that's at navigationarts.com/fedmobile.
So if you're listening to this and about to hear a presentation on a company in town here talking about mobile applications, well, it's a nice review. You know, it's like I used to take all these security tests online. You always review before you took the A-plus test or the Security Plus or the CC and whatever these different tests I used to take. Don't take those anymore, but I think those have gotten out of vogue. Every one of my guests has to take this scientific survey, Don.
All right, I'm ready.
And this is a 10-question test, and we put this through a big computer, and we try to determine if you are, in fact, a card-carrying nerd. So the first question is...
You don't need the computer for that one, I can tell
what
you.
What year did you buy your first computer?
That would have been 1983. I was 12 years old, and I had a piano teacher, and I bought from her a Commodore VIC-20 for the princely sum of $20.
I remember that product well.
And that was the same year that War Games came out, and I thought I was just going to take over the world.
You're your first cell phone?
I was a very late adopter to cell phones. My brother actually gave me a cell phone probably in 2007.
Ooh, you're losing points on that one.
I know.
Really serious.
Well, you know, the thing is, I've got a very addictive personality where technology is concerned, and I knew as soon as I got a cell phone or a smartphone, it was gonna basically take over my life, and it has.
And do you have your own Twitter feed?
Just what I do with Navigation Arts, so it's at Navigation Arts.
Okay. And do you have your own blog?
Again, I don't blog about anything personal anymore, so it's just work-related, and you can find it all at NavArts.
Okay. And do you use online personal backup?
No, I actually don't. I think we do at work, but it's so transparent that I don't even have to think about it.
I like asking that question, especially to security people. They hate me asking that
question. Oh, really?
What kind of a smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone 4S.
Okay. And number of apps on that bad boy?
Gosh, I'm really stingy about adding apps to my phone. So I've got chess.com, Pandora, Yelp, OpenTable, Google Maps.
Is this one of your best practices? I hear a best practice here. Limit number of apps.
Well, you know, at this point, you know, it's got to provide, one of the best practices is it's got to provide repeat value. And if something is not something that I go to on a regular basis, it gets voted off the island very quickly.
Because there are malicious apps out there that just sit and can cause trouble.
Well, that's true too. Yes, absolutely.
What kind of tablet device do you have?
I have a Kindle Fire.
Okay.
And I got that as a present. I wish they'd given me an iPad, but...
And what social networking sites do you participate in?
I am big on Facebook, big on LinkedIn, and that's, you know, my wife will tell you I spend way too much time on both.
And the last book you read, was electronic or paper?
It was paper.
Oh, you were so close. You were just about to be a card-carrying nerd, but I'll have to...
I've still got to keep a foot in the analog world, just to keep saying.
I've got a UNIVAC computer in my basement. And
I'll
put this through the UNIVAC and print it out on my green bar, and I'll put in the U.S. mail the results. We'll find out where you rank as far as the other 295 guests I've had as far as your nerdometer scale. This is also the type of show where I also get a crystal ball. There used to be a sports station. There used to be a sports show that was done from the studio, and they had a crystal ball in here. And so I hand a literal crystal ball to people. Don't have it anymore. But what's going to happen here with mobile apps down the road? Is HTML going to win out completely? Are apps going to win out? Is it going to be a hybrid? Or where do you see this whole technology heading?
You know, I think, and this may be sort of very Ray Kurzweil, very singularity driven, but I think, you know, eventually we're going to get to the point where, you know, it's going to be less about the device and more about ubiquity. I think, you know, we've all heard the parable of the fridge magnet that will order, you know, the Domino's pizza fridge magnet that will order you a pizza, or your refrigerator talking to your cell phone telling you that, you know, you need to order milk. Eventually, I think we're going to get to the point, and I don't know what that's going to look like, but I can see a time coming where computing, personal computing, is going to be free of the device, and you're going to have access to the same kinds of information just in the ambient environment that you would in your desktop computer. That's sort of the 2001 or the 2101 view of that.
You know, the surprising company that's investing a lot of money in that, and no one's going to believe it, is a company called Microsoft. They're spending more on R&D than Google and Apple combined.
That's amazing.
And they're looking at technology like that, where there's projection screens where you can project a keyboard onto your hand.
Sure.
And it's some of the technologies that are out there are really kind of shocking. Bring it more into practical.
Sure, of course.
For our listeners here. So we got a White House initiative. Every federal IT professional or agency is going to come up with a couple apps by May of this year.
That's right.
So do you think they're going to hit it? You think there's going to be a lot of headaches, or you think there's going to be a lot of delays? You think they're going to hit that goal?
I don't think most will. And the surprising thing is that when I talk to federal web managers, a lot of them still have not heard of this.
Really?
Well, and I think there's a couple of things going on. Number one, just because you release a report doesn't mean that you're going to get compliance. And this is largely an unfunded mandate. So, you know, you have to do this, but we're not actually going to give you any money to do it to do it with. And there's no stick and there's no carrot, really. So in a lot of cases, I think people are going to be caught flat-footed by this. For those who are trying to play catch up, you know, this is definitely where we live. This is exactly in our sweet spot, and we would love to help federal agencies become compliant with these mandates.
So a year from now, when the inspector general comes knocking on someone's door and they get a little checklist and they go, let me take a review of your mobile apps, you're going to have to come up with something.
Well, you know, and the thing that I'm afraid of is that it's very easy to satisfy the letter of that law. It's very easy to roll out something. The question is that app going to really fit the needs of your mobile users? And that's something you'll only do by following a user-centered design process, by going through the rigorous process of doing your user research and designing a solution with the mobile user in mind.
There's an agency called the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency.
Yes, indeed.
NGI. And they have a kind of creative way. What they're going to try to do is try to come up with an app and test it out and have the users pay for it by the number of downloads. And mm-hmm. so the agency can come up with the requirements, and then a creative company can come up with an app, and the agency doesn't have to spend any money on the app, and the app will be paid for by it's the App Store model,
right,
almost.
Right.
It's intriguing, but there are creative ways to accomplish this goal of having two apps on your site for an agency. I mean,
sure.
And this is just fascinating. I never thought of something that creative, but all of a sudden it transfers the cost to someone else who's trying to get that information.
Absolutely. And you know, along those lines, a very good friend of mine, Nancy Schwartzman, developed an application or created an app called Circle of Six. And this was done as part of a challenge.gov contest to address the problem of violence against women. And this was something that was done out of the Office of the Vice President and the Office of Science and Technology in the White House.
Did you say Todd Park?
I'm sorry. Exactly. So the idea is that this is an application that was sponsored by the federal government, but it was created by the private industry. And the idea is that in my circle of six, I pick six friends who will respond to me if I need help. And this application has three buttons on it. You know, call me, text me, or come get me. So if I'm at a party and I don't feel safe, or if I'm, you know, stuck on the side of the road and I've got no, you know, nothing in sight, I can click on, you know, one button and nobody has to know what I'm doing, and all of a sudden my circle of six will come to my rescue. And it's a brilliant solution, and it's something that you wouldn't necessarily think of in a boardroom of a federal agency, but by turning over, by harnessing the creative power of the commercial space, you know, you can really accomplish some amazing things with that partnership of government and business.
And I think that's how agencies are going to reduce cost, is they're going to have public-private partnerships.
Sure.
And they're going to be creative, and it's probably going to be from someone under 30 saying, well, why can't we come up with an app and just give the requirements for it and have some company design it, and
right.
they get paid by the download. Make sure it's a good app, wouldn't
sure,
it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
If it's a poor app, if it's weak, if it's got security flaws, no one's going to download it. So
right.
interesting.
Right.
Well, great. We'll have to come back in a year or 6 months and find out exactly how many people have met their report card as far
Indeed.
As two apps and see how successful it's been. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Don Bruns, Managing Director at Navigation Arts. Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.